is. Yes, yes, I thought it over quite thoroughly. It is, it's 42.
Rubbish!
It would have been simpler, of course, to have known what the actual question was.
But it was the question. The ultimate question. Of everything.
That's not a question. Only when you know the question will you know what the answer means.
Give us the ultimate question, then.
I can't. But...
And that right there is what you call the ultimate letdown. Oh, what a horrible moment, huh? Gosh, well, thankfully, we know the question. I love that line where the big creature or whatever that thing was, only when you know the question will you know what the answer means. And, of course, we know the question, don't we? In fact, we've been sort of journeying through this question over these last few weeks in this series that we're in called Ultimate Question. And the question is one that is sparked by something we read in the book of Ephesians. In fact, if you have your Bibles, I want to take you to Ephesians chapter 5 this morning. Ephesians chapter 5, something that the Apostle Paul writes here. In fact, I want us to read it together. Can we do that? You guys are ready to participate this morning? Yeah? Yep, good. Wow. Okay, Ephesians chapter 5. Let's read it together. Ready? So be careful. All right, hold on a second. First of all, wake up, all right? And let's try that again. Is it because our coffee bar is closed? Is that why? Because we've got Red Bull. We could just pass it around. Anyway, communion, right? Red Bull. No, anyway. Ephesians 5, let's read it together, ready? So be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise. And of course, that takes us to the ultimate question, which is this right here. What is the wise thing to do? Ask it with me, ready? What is the wise thing to do in light of my past experiences, my current circumstances, my future hopes and dreams? What is the wise thing to do? What is the wise thing to do relationally? What is the wise thing to do financially, morally, professionally, spiritually, on down the list? What is the wise thing to do? And, you know, I don't know about you, but over these last few weeks, as we've been talking about all these things, it has really hit me that this truly is, I think, one of the most important questions we could ever ask in our entire lives. And yet, what's ironic about it is that while everyone knows it's a good question and everyone would agree that it's a good question, it's still amazing to me how often this question seems to be avoided in people's lives. It's amazing to me how people avoid asking this question and oftentimes end up making the same mistake over and over and over again, especially when it comes to the arena of our moral decisions and choices. Yeah, our moral decisions and choices. In fact, I want to talk about that today. I want to talk about our moral decisions and choices. I mean, after all, it's Mother's Day. What else do you talk about on Mother's Day, right? Moral decisions and choices. I'm just kidding. Every day, listen, by the way, happy Mother's Day to you. And no, that's not why I wore pink. I know some of you are like, seriously, is that why you wore? No, this, by the way, this is not pink, this is salmon. Okay, let's just get that out. All right, anyway. Yeah. No, happy Mother's Day. But listen, every day is a good day to talk about our moral decisions and choices. Because man, if there is any area of our lives that we need wisdom in, man, it is this area right here. Because if you think about it, okay, out of all of the regrets we have in life, none of them go as deep as the regret that's associated with our moral decisions that we make that are unwise. None of them go as deep. I mean, if you think about all the regrets and all the failures we have in life, the chances are there's several of those regrets and failures one day we can look back at, maybe even laugh at. You know, hey, remember that time we wasted the money and that season in our lives where we just weren't managing time well or whatever. But here's the thing, when it comes to moral failure, time doesn't always help. You know, think about it. Nobody ever laughs about an affair. Nobody ever laughs about abuse or about sexual addiction. You know, I can't imagine, you know, Tiger Woods or Lawrence Taylor snickering 10 years from now. Look what we did. No. And the reason for that is because the pain in moral failure is not just felt with the person who actually had the failure. Man, it's felt by all sorts of people, isn't it? It's felt by everyone. It's felt by family. In fact, sometimes it's even felt for generations. And see, here's the thing. Okay, when we talk about moral failure, sometimes it's easy for us to think in our minds, well, you know, I mean, only bad people fail morally. No, but see, that's not true. Anybody can fail morally, okay? I mean, it can happen to anyone. It can happen to good people. It can happen to pastors. Yeah, it can happen to PTA moms. It can happen, I mean, it can even happen, ready, to politicians. Yeah, see, it can happen to anyone. And see, what's interesting is over the years, as I've talked to people who've had moral failures in their lives, oftentimes it's like the same thing I hear over and over and over again. It's a statement that's made in one way or another that basically says, Scott, you know, here's the thing, Scott, nobody understands. I mean, Scott, nobody really understands. You know, it's like as if the situation is somehow unique to that person only. And like that person's the only person that it's ever happened to and nobody else. I remember when I was in our youth group when I was a kid, there was this guy in our youth group who was having sex with his girlfriend. And I remember, he just seemed like so okay with it, like no big deal, yeah, woo. And I remember saying, like, seriously, man, what are you doing? I mean, you're just having sex, and it's like you don't care. And I'll never forget him saying to me, this has always stuck with me. Well, Scott, it's hard to explain, okay? You got to understand, like, our situation is different. Our situation is different, okay? You just wouldn't understand, okay? All I can say is that God has given us special permission. Oh, is that right? God has given you, God who? Godiva? Who? What are you talking about, right? But see, here's the thing, the reason people say things like this is, and the reason people avoid the ultimate question in this area of life is because they think they're the only ones. And see, I think that's part of the reason so many people are so prone to making what almost always is recognized in hindsight as a bad decision, all because of that little voice on the inside that says, you know what, no one has ever felt this way before, I'm the only one that ever had to deal with what I'm having to deal with right now, and yeah, Scott, I know what the statistics say, but come on, Scott, they don't apply to me, my family, you know, we're a little bit different, or, you know, trust me, I know what's best. See, here's the thing, as long as you're convinced that there is something unique about your circumstances, as long as you're convinced that there's something unique about your emotions or your desires or your temptations or your passions or whatever you want to call them, as long as you're convinced that those are unique to you and you alone, chances are you will resist this question that has the potential to saving your butt from an awful lot of trouble. I mean, besides, at the end of the day, if you think about it, I mean, you know, look, depressed is depressed no matter what pill you're taking, right? I mean, seriously, lonely is lonely no matter how many friends you have, no matter how famous you are. Lonely is lonely, right? I mean, addiction is addiction, right? No matter who you are, no matter where you live, no matter what you do, addiction is addiction. Whatever it is, it's not unique. And that's freeing for some of you just to know that you're not alone. I mean, the temptations and the challenges, the addictions, the tendencies, okay, that all those things that you and I face and that you and that people struggle through, that's been a challenge for people since the beginning of time. And so let's talk about that for a few minutes. Let's talk about moral failure. I mean, after all, everyone else is talking about it, right? Huh? I mean, the news is talking about it, right? Talk shows are talking, I mean, what else would talk shows talk about if there wasn't moral failure, right? I mean, that's what keeps them in business, right? People Magazine is talking about it. So we might as well talk about it today as well. I want you to think for a second about the greatest moral regret of your life. Think about it for a second. Greatest moral regret of your life. Once you think about it, just go ahead and say it out loud. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Whew. That would be a Mother's Day we would never forget. Seriously, Mom? What? No. Now, think about it for a second, though. What is the greatest moral regret of your life? Chances are, if you're like most people, when you think about your greatest moral regret, when you think about what happened in your life, and especially when you start to think about how it all went down and how it all happened, you probably think things like, man, at some point in your mind, you probably think things like, man, if I just wouldn't have made that one phone call. Man, if I just hadn't taken that trip, if I just hadn't friended that person, my ex on Facebook. If I just hadn't subscribed to that internet site, if I just hadn't taken that job, if I just hadn't accepted that invitation. Here's my point. Okay, look, this is the bottom line, and you know this as well as I do. Nobody goes from being happily married to having an affair overnight. No one wakes up one day and says, oh, you know, today just seems like it'd be a great day for an affair. In fact, I'm going to go get my affair shoes on, and I'm going to go have me an affair. I hear they're on sale down at Walmart. No one wakes up one day and just decides they're going to have an affair. No one goes from being a person who has great financial integrity and character to the next day sitting in prison due to extorting money or some other illegal money scandal. No one goes from that to that in just one day. I mean, think about it. How do these things happen? Think about how do these failures, how do our moral or unethical or illegal, whatever it might be, how do they happen? Here's how they happen. It's very simple. They happen, ready? They happen one decision at a time. One decision at a time. They happen, okay, through a series of decision. One thing led to another, and then that led to another, and another, and another, all the way to the brink of that moment that you now regret. That's how it happens. Speaking of one thing leading to another, I want you to meet a couple this morning by the name of Bob and Elaine. I think you'll, just watch this.
This is Bob.
Oh, hey, Elaine.
I was just thinking about you. But, you know, you really shouldn't call me here.
I know. I just couldn't help myself. I wanted to hear your voice again.
Oh, yeah?
And thank you for lunch.
Lunch? Well, you know, if I had my way, you'd be thanking me for a lot more than just lunch later on.
Well, actually, that's why I'm calling.
Really? Are you trying to seduce me, Mrs. Robinson?
Am I that obvious?
You're transparent, but I don't care. How about we meet again tonight?
Tonight? I don't know.
For dinner. Is Scott going to be a problem? Because I told you I could have someone take care of him if you just let me.
No, don't worry about that. I'll handle it.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I can figure that out.
So, how about the usual place?
Do you think that we're getting too predictable?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. You make the call.
You're right. It'll be fine. I'll see you there at 6, and I'll be sure and wear something inappropriate. And later on, I want to...
It's okay. I'm glad you're here.
I didn't know if I could get away. Scott was there, and he's... Ryan called, and he'll be tied up for hours.
Works for me.
Yeah. You know that if we keep coming here, the staff's going to start to recognize us.
You're right. Are you okay?
It's just, I'm scared of being interrupted, and this is too good to be true.
Well, let's just enjoy the time we have together right now. Hey, while we're waiting, I have a little something for you.
Oh, Bob. It's beautiful. You didn't have... You've got to stop spending this kind of money on me.
But I want to. I mean, it makes you so happy, and I love to see you smile. You are so beautiful.
I don't know what we were afraid of.
I couldn't get any work done today.
I know. I don't even recognize myself anymore.
Things are getting out of hand.
You know that you're taking me places I never thought I could go.
I never dreamed it could be this good.
Is there any chance of us making it through dinner?
Maybe.
Hello? Oh, hi, Scott.
What does he want?
Nothing much. Did you need something? Yeah. He knows you're here, and he wants to talk to you.
Go ahead and just take a deep breath. Glad I'm not that Scott. Listen, our greatest moral regrets are always preceded by a series of unwise choices. Not wrong choices necessarily, not illegal choices, but unwise choices. See, and I think what tends to happen, okay, is almost like we choose ourselves right to the brink of disaster. Because chances are, if you think about it, none of the choices we make along the way are quote-unquote wrong, you know? So we justify them. See, it's always about a series of unwise choices that more often than not end up taking us to the point of no return. And it's amazing because we can be right in the middle of it and be so blinded. And yet what's ironic about it is when it's somebody else and we're watching someone else slowly making their way towards moral disaster, we see it and we're standing on the sidelines going, no, don't do it. We see it so clearly, don't we? Interesting thing. See, the bottom line is this. At some point, we all have to decide where we're going to draw that line. I mean, at some point, we've got to decide, okay, there's got to be a standard, there's got to be a line drawn somewhere, and if there's not, what will happen is you'll constantly find yourself at the brink of disaster. And see, part of the reason I think this is so important, and you know this as well as I do, anybody who's ever allowed things to go that far never intended for them to go that far, did they? They never intended, which is exactly the problem. They never intended them to go that far, and yet they did go that far. Look, let's be honest. None of us ever intended to get into any of the situations that we now regret, did we? No, none of us ever intended to get ourselves, whether it was financially, morally, professionally, relationally, whatever regret it is, it all came unintentionally. Look, nobody plans to blow up their marriage, do they? Nobody plans to lose their job because of unethical decisions. Nobody plans to get a DUI because they were drinking too many drinks with their buddies and decided to drive home. Nobody, it's never intentional, which is fine. Except for the fact that it takes a lot more than good intentions to cross the finish line in any area of life. Look, none of us plan to get into trouble. The problem is we don't plan not to get into trouble, do we? See, and that's why I think the scriptures are so clear. I mean, there's some places in the scriptures where you read it and you go, okay, what are they trying to say here? Let's look at the Greek and the Hebrew and the Swahili. Not that there's Swahili in the Bible, but you know, let's try to figure out what the Bible's really saying. Then there's other times that, man, you read something and it is just like a boom, kung fu kick, and it's clear, man. Well, here's one example of that, okay? The scriptures are so clear, especially when in regards to one of the greatest moral challenges of our time, of our lives, and what I'm talking about is sexual temptation. Now, I know some of you are thinking about, great, Scott, awesome, okay? The weekend that I bring my mom to church, nothing I'd rather us talk about in the company of my mother than sex, okay? Hey, it's okay. Okay, it's all right. She already knows about it. All right, because, you know, if she didn't, you wouldn't be here. So be glad that she knows something about it. She probably knows more than you. Anyway, And okay, and you think it's weird to be sitting there talking about sex. Imagine being me and my mom is actually sitting out here right now. Yeah, okay, so anyway, the Apostle Paul gives us a very clear, very, very simple approach. This is like the strategy. So someone might say, what's the strategy for avoiding sexual temptation? Here it is. You ready? This is going to blow your mind. All right? 1 Corinthians 6:18. Run from sexual sin. No other sin so clearly affects the body as this one does. He says, run from sexual sin. Now what could he really be trying to say there? Let's examine the Greek and the Hebrew. Look, some Bibles translations actually use the word flee, okay? Bottom line is this: run really fast in the opposite direction when you're facing sexual temptation. Think about this, okay? There's a certain emotion that's associated with fleeing. You know what it is? It's called fear, right? All right, think about it. We flee when we know we're in danger. Hey, anybody here ever been chased by an ostrich before? No, seriously, anybody, have you ever been chased by an ostrich? No, neither have I, okay? But I would imagine that if I were being chased by an ostrich, I would run like Forrest Gump, all right? I would take off because, A, I hate birds, all right? And B, ostriches are very fast. They run like 43 miles per hour. Have you seen Jurassic Park? Okay, just watch it. You'll see what I'm talking about, okay? And see, they can rip you right open. They got these nails that are so sharp, and they are capable of slicing someone in two with one kick. Boom, done. All right, so here's the deal. If you ever see an ostrich running, I don't care how cute he looks, all right? If you ever see an ostrich running your direction, you better run like a freight train, man. And see, that's exactly what the writer is saying to us. When you and I are facing sexual temptation, you better flee. You better run in the opposite direction. But we don't do that, do we? No. We don't run, do we? We don't. You know why we don't? Because we don't fear it. Yeah, we don't fear it. Instead, what we do, so instead of running, instead of fleeing, what do? We flirt with it, right? We flirt with it. We really believe we can handle it, right? So instead of fleeing, we flirt with it. I mean, after all, there's nothing wrong with flirting, right? Scott, show me in the Bible where it says that I'm not allowed to flirt with a woman that I'm not married to. Show me. If you want to use your line of reasoning, okay? Well, here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with standing in the middle of a field while an ostrich who just had his nails sharpened is running your direction 43 miles per hour laughing hysterically like Jack Nicholson. Nothing wrong with just standing there. No, there's no sermons against that. There's nothing illegal about that. There's nothing immoral or unethical about it. But I'll tell you what it is. It is stupid. It's stupid. Let's go back to the scripture. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18. Paul says this. All other sins a man commits are outside his body. But he who sins sexually sins against his own body. Okay, you know what he's saying here? He's saying this. He's saying, look, sexual sin is in a category all its own. Now, don't get me wrong, okay? It's not in God's eyes, okay? In God's eyes, sin is sin. There's no such thing as like a tier A sin, you know, and then you got the tier B and C and D. No. I mean, sin is sin in God's eyes. But here's the thing. Sexual sin is the most dangerous type of sin because it messes us up deep inside. It messes us up, both in males and females, okay? And here's the thing. Shame runs deep. It runs awfully deep, and it can seep into every facet of a person's life. And see, that's why even after coming to grips with God's forgiveness, and some of you, you've experienced this, you can accept the fact that God's forgiven you, you can receive that, but there are so many of us who struggle, who have sinned sexually, who struggle and wrestle with forgiving themselves. Man, because it runs deep. And so with that in mind, let's ask the ultimate question, all right? In light of your past experiences, your current circumstances, and future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for you to do in order to avoid regret in this area of life? In light of your past experiences, in light of your current circumstances, in light of your future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for you to do in order to avoid regret in this area of life? How many of you have ever been to Maui, the island of Maui? Just out of curiosity. Oh, some of you all need a vacation. Well, I had the privilege of going to Maui twice. Last time I went, it was 14 years ago, our honeymoon. 14 years. This last week, 14 years we celebrate. Yeah. Anyway, so we went to Maui on our honeymoon, and there's this little road in Maui. If you were there, it's called the Road to Hana. Any of you ever been on the Road to Hana? Okay, it's a really interesting road. It's like it goes to this little town that's in this island called Hana, and it's kind of a long trip. It's only like 68 miles, but it takes like 3 hours to get there because you got all these windy roads and all these narrow roads, and it takes about a good 3 hours at least to pass over all these bridges. And there's like 59 bridges on this road to Hana, and 49 of those are one lane bridges. Okay, it's absolutely beautiful, but by the time you get there, you feel like you're gonna throw up. Okay, and then we actually had to pull aside, but then I'm gonna stop there. But anyway. I remember being on this road to Hana and feeling at times like if we were to just lean this way a little bit, I remember thinking there is no room for error here. I mean, if and my wife was driving because I was too busy getting ready to throw up. I mean, if she had a little twitch, boom, you're gone. Right? There was no margin for error. You fall right off the cliff. That's exactly where a lot of us live, right there, right on the edge of the cliff. One wrong move, boom. See, and there's no margin for error. See, here's the thing, okay, we all have lines drawn somewhere. We all have lines drawn. The problem is that most people have those lines drawn right up at the very edge, right at the edge, and there's no room for margin. Okay, so how about your life? How about in your life? Okay, where are your lines? Where are the boundaries in your life? Okay, men, think about it for a second. What's more difficult? Guys, come on. Let's just be honest. What's more difficult? Resisting the temptation to ask a woman who's not your wife to lunch or saying no when you're alone with her in her apartment after you've had a few drinks? Women. Come on, what's more difficult, saying no to that lunch invitation or resisting the advances that this man who you are infatuated with is making after you've had a couple of drinks and you're in your apartment with him? Come on, what's more difficult? Where's the line? Where's that line drawn for you? See, I'll tell you what, this is important to talk about because I think for many of us, here's what most of us do, all right? We talked last week about what's typical. Okay, here's what's typical. Most people ask the question, okay, where's the line between right and wrong? And then once we establish that line between right and wrong, what we do is we live really close to that line, right? Or sometimes we actually live on that line because, God forbid, we miss out on anything. So we're going to live right on that line. And yet, okay, and this is where we start feeling the tension. And some of you, you're new in this journey of following Christ, and you feel this tension right now in a huge way, okay? And you're discovering Jesus, and you're learning about the scriptures and things like that, but you still have this other foot of yours that's still kind of over here in an unsafe territory. And so you're feeling this tension. It's like on one hand, you want to obey the commands of Jesus. You want to do the right thing. You want to live a holy life. But at the same time, you don't want to do anything that'll haunt you, and you don't do anything that'll hurt you or others in the future, but yet you've still got this kind of drawing here. So what do you do? Well, here's what most people do. Most people, once they have that line established, here's the strategy. Okay, here's the line. Here's my strategy. I'm just going to try not to cross it. He tried to cross the line. See, no, but that's what we do, right? We say, okay, here's the line, and now here's my strategy. I'm going to not cross the line. Well, hey, that sounds good, but the problem is, okay, since the line is so close to the edge of the cliff, there's no margin for error. One wrong move, boom, you're done, you're gone. And the thing is, that might be okay when it comes to some areas of our lives. You're late to work one time, no big deal, right? You're out past your curfew, may not be huge. You stop exercising for a day, maybe not a big deal. But I'll tell you what, when you cross certain lines sexually or morally, there are always, always, always consequences. And sometimes those consequences will last for the rest of your life. I mean, think about it. What are the consequences? What does it mean? Well, kids. How about this? Kids growing up without a dad in the home. Huh? How about this? Living the rest of your life with the distraction of images in your mind that you can't seem to get rid of. How about this? It means young ladies losing the opportunity to give themselves wholly to their husband on their wedding night. We're going down the list, right? Diseases, prison, maybe even death. Listen. To not leave room for margin in your life, okay, is not only dangerous, but I'll tell you what else. It's also extremely insensitive, and it's one of the most insensitive things we could do to those we love in our lives. We need margin. We need margin. So back to that question, what is the ultimate, or what is the wise thing to do? Well, the wise thing would be to move away from the edge of the cliff. Move away from the edge, okay? And so one of the things you can do, and this is very practical right now, is you could establish artificial boundaries. Yeah, you could establish artificial boundaries in your life that are a safe distance away from the moral point of no return. Okay, what I'm talking about here are boundaries that are so far from the brink of disaster that should you violate one of these, the consequences would be minimal. That's an artificial boundary, okay? Because here's the thing, it's not if you're going to fail. The question is, you will fail. The question is, what side of the line are you going to fail on? I mean, if you got to fail on either side, you better set up some margin for you to fail on the right side of the line. Yeah, but Scott, that just seems so extreme. Yeah, I know, but so are the consequences of moral failure. Sometimes extreme is okay. See, when you think about it that way, it's like suddenly we become a little, I mean, let me ask you this way, okay? How extreme do you want your current or future spouse to be when it comes to protecting themselves from slipping up sexually with someone else? Oh, all of a sudden, extreme's okay, right? Right? Oh, Scott, we don't want to be extreme. Well, let me ask you this. How extreme are you willing to go? Think about your children. Huh? How extreme are you willing to go to protect your children from having to navigate through all of the pain and the hurt and the confusion that moral failure will bring into their lives? How extreme? See, sometimes extremes aren't so bad. In light of what's at stake, what is the wise thing to do? In light of what you want for your marriage or your future marriage or your family, okay, in light of the extreme consequences associated with moral failure, what extreme measures are you willing to take in your life? I mean, I tell you, and maybe some of you sitting here, you might think, well, geez, you seem so fired up about this. Well, yeah, but you know what? You're not the one that's sitting with couples in your office because they've just gone, someone's gone through an affair. And you're not the one that's dealing with the broken families day in and day out. I see this stuff all the time. And it's not bad people. It's people that I love. It's people that I care about. It's people just like you and me. Andy Stanley, who was really the inspiration behind this whole series to begin with, he shares what he thinks are some of the top environments in which seeds of moral failure are sown in the life of a married person. He says, here's the common ones right here, and I tend to agree with him. One of them, he says, is chatting and building relationships online with members of the opposite sex. Having dinner or drinks after work with members of the opposite sex. Here's another one, working with a personal trainer of the opposite sex. Counseling with members of the opposite sex. And look, we could go on and we could add to that list. You might even disagree with some of these, and that's okay, because these aren't like, well, let me open the Bible and show you, okay? This, you might disagree with these, that's okay, but here's the question. What are your boundaries? Where are they? Where are your boundaries? Are your boundaries so far from the line of regret that if you were to cross one, you would suffer little to no consequences? Where's your boundary? Now, let me just give you an example of this, okay? A few years ago, I grew up around ministry all my life. Pastors, I've seen countless numbers of pastors fail morally. You've seen it too, right? We've all seen it fail morally, financially, in all these different areas of life. And thankfully, I had a father who, I remember standing over his casket when he died. He was a pastor, for years, and I remember being able to stand there and think to myself, you know what? He didn't necessarily do everything right, but man, he had integrity and character, and he never failed morally in his life. He never stole any money from the church. He never had sex with a woman who wasn't his wife. And I'll tell you, like that, I aspire. I hope my kids one day can stand around my casket and say the same thing. Dads, how about you, huh? You want to leave a legacy for your kids? Don't try to be perfect in your life. Just set some decent boundaries in your life so you don't screw everything up. So a few years ago, I made the decision that I was just going to play it extra safe when it came to moral decisions in my life. So one of the rules that I created was I made the decision I am not ever going to ride alone in a car with a woman who's not my wife. Never going to ride in a car with a woman alone who's not my wife. I also made the decision I wasn't going to counsel women. A lot of reasons for that. But anyway, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But sort of. But I know some of you are probably thinking, well, dang, Scott, that seems extreme. I mean, you're a pastor. Pastors are supposed to counsel women. Well, I don't know where you read that at, pal. Counselors are supposed to counsel. I'm not a counselor. I'm a pastor. You don't even want me to counsel you. If I counsel you, you're going to need counseling afterwards. But anyway, that's besides the point. Here's the deal, though. For me, okay, it might seem extreme, but I'll tell you what. By eliminating those two activities, I've eliminated two possible contexts for temptation in my life. And I understand to some people that might seem insensitive. It might seem impractical. Scott, there's nothing wrong with riding a car with a woman who's not your wife. You're right. But I'll tell you what. I've never regretted that decision, and neither has my wife. We've never regretted it. And I'll tell you, even though at times it's caused some awkwardness, and even though at times there's been awkward situations with people who didn't understand or took it personally, I've never regretted it, neither has my wife. But Scott, why go to such great lengths? Why? Well, here's why. Let's go back to what we said a minute ago. Because every regretful moral decision is preceded by a series of unwise choices, okay, that on the surface usually never raise an eyebrow or infringe upon our culturally programmed conscience, but yet they can so easily lead us down a path of regret. And so, yeah, it may be extreme to some people, but let's just be honest. Men, listen, all right, I'm just going to say it. Look, because we said PG-13, so now it's your problem. You can't have sex with a woman if you're never alone with her. Unless you're an absolute freak, which is for another sermon another time. But anyway, see, here's the thing. And see, here's why these artificial boundaries are so powerful in our lives. Here's what happens. Eventually what happens is that your conscience will actually start to latch on to these artificial standards you've created in your life. Your conscience starts to latch. So what happens is that when you violate one of your self-imposed rules that's far from the line, okay, what happens when you cross one of those lines over here, you feel guilty. But it's a good guilt. It's like a low-risk guilt, but it's good because it serves as a reminder that if you keep stepping that direction, eventually you're going to hit the edge. As you hit the edge, a couple years ago, let me just give an example of this. A couple years ago, I was out of town speaking at a conference, and I had to leave early that morning to fly I think I was in Texas to Atlanta, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I get my stuff. I'm walking out of the hotel, and I walk through the lobby of the hotel, and I run into this woman in this hotel lobby who I knew. She was actually at the same conference I was at. I knew her. I knew her husband. We're friends. Great couple. And she asked where I was headed. I said, well, I'm headed out. She goes, well, you're up early. I said, yeah, I know. So are you. And well, it turns out that she also needed to get to the airport. And actually, she was sort of freaking out because she was afraid she was going to miss her flight because she thought she could find a shuttle or something. She couldn't find one. So since I was going to the airport, she asked me, she said, Scott, would you give me a ride to the airport? And of course, I'm already running late because that's just how I do things, okay? And so I'm like, I'm in such a hurry that I don't have time to try to figure out another solution for her. So I said, okay, you know what? Let me go get my car. I'll pull around and pick you up, and I'll give you a ride to the airport. And so I got to tell you, okay, when I walked away and I started walking to my car, I felt awful. Oh, I started sweating. I felt like I had just committed the worst sin in the world. And I'll never forget, I got to my car, and the first thing I do is I got my phone. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. I call my wife. I said, Amanda, I don't know what to do. Okay, she needs a ride, but I don't do that. And you know I don't do that, okay? And I just need you to know what I'm doing because I feel horrible. I feel guilty. Her response, Scott, take the poor girl to the airport. And see, it wasn't even that big of a deal to her, but I felt horrible. I even texted a couple of my friends, close friends. I said, just so you know, I'm driving a woman who's not my wife to the airport, and you can text me every 5 minutes if you want, whatever, okay? See, it wasn't even a big deal. No one cared but me, okay? Nobody even gave it a second thought, but I was uncomfortable driving in the car, sweat dripping down. I'm like, and she's probably like, what's wrong with you? You freak, get me out of the car. And I'm just like, yeah. Okay, let's thank God the windows aren't tinted, you know? And it's like, See, because it wasn't because I was worried something was going to happen. It's not because I didn't trust this woman. Man, this great gal who I knew fairly well. I was uncomfortable because I crossed a boundary that I had set up in my life. And it's good. It's good that I felt that way. See, and that's the power of setting up artificial boundaries that are far, 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 far away from the edge of the cliff in our lives. See, here's the thing, okay? Wherever the ultimate question leads you in terms of setting up boundaries for your behavior, okay, your conscience will latch on. Your conscience will take residency there as well. And see, here's the thing. This is just about sometimes just being super practical, okay? And just asking the question, okay? For me, I ask the question, okay, in light of my current circumstances, which means I say, okay, in light of the influence that I have as a pastor, in light of the influence I have as a father, in light of the influence I have as a spouse, okay, when I ask that question, what is the wise thing to do? I'll tell you what, I've made all kinds of decisions that to many of you probably think are absolutely silly. And let me tell you something, though. This isn't just something that's good for me because I'm a pastor. This is something that's good for all of us who are desiring to follow Jesus. Not be perfect, but who want to be people who move beyond the typical, people who move beyond just going through life in survival mode and who want to embrace the kind of life that God created us to live. Here's the bottom line. Proverbs 24:14. Listen. Wisdom is sweet to your soul. If you find it, you will have a bright future, and your hopes will not be cut short. In light of your past experiences, your current circumstances, your future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for you to do in order to avoid regret in this area of life? Listen, what's it going to take? Some of you, perhaps for some of you, it's rethinking some of the boundaries that you've created in your dating life. For others of you, it might mean making some radical, radical changes. I mean, how bad do you want? For some of you, it might mean for some of you moving back home. It might mean for some of you saying, you know what, I'm done with the internet. I'm going to cancel my internet service because I've got a problem. For others of you, it might mean saying, I'm going to shut off the cable TV. For others of you, it might say, you know what, I'm shutting my Facebook account off because I can't seem to stop browsing the pages of my ex-girlfriends or ones that I wish were my ex-girlfriends or current girlfriend. Listen, let me tell you something. Facebook, be careful. Man, I just heard about a pastor friend of mine who got in touch with his ex-girlfriend on Facebook. And several weeks ago, he got in front of his church and resigned because he crossed the line. See, so it's for some of you, it may seem extreme when I say, you know what, my Facebook, every interaction, anything someone said goes all through my assistant. Scott, that's kind of extreme. Call it what you want. I don't want to have to stand up in front of you and say the same thing. See, your friends might chuckle. Your friend, you might be embarrassed, but here's the thing. What's more important to you, freedom or not being embarrassed? Come on, men. Is it worth sacrificing your integrity and your family and your reputation for that 15 minutes, or maybe that's generous for some of you, of pleasure? Seriously, is it worth it, okay? Look, let me tell you something. Yes, I said it, okay? Some of you need to take this question, and you need to allow this question to dictate the kind of environments you're going to put yourself in your life. Some, if you're single, consider how physically involved you should be in a dating context. Think about your entertainment options, where you're going, who you're spending time with, and yes, whatever it is, it might seem extreme. All I know is I can't tell you how many people I've heard say over and over again, Scott, I would give anything. I would do anything. I would go as far as I need to go if I could just go back and change what I did. I would do anything. So maybe it is extreme, but maybe extreme isn't so bad. Look, the time to make the decisions in your life are right now, because if you don't, someone else will decide for you. Teenagers, let me tell you something. Right now is the time to make those decisions in your life. And you think mom and dad's paranoid for you? Well, they have every freaking right to be paranoid for you. So in light of your past experiences, current circumstances, future hopes and dreams? What is the wise thing for you to do in order to avoid regret in this area of life? That right there is the ultimate question. And listen, that question will bring great reward in your life. Speaking of great reward, remember the couple that we were watching a few minutes ago that was causing us all to have miniature heart attacks? That was kind of intense, but I want you to see what happened when that phone rang. Watch this.
Hello? Oh, hi, Scott.
What does he want?
Nothing much. Did you need something? Yeah. He knows you're here, and he wants to talk to you.
What's up, buddy? Our son has an M&M stuck up his nose again. Okay, tell Ryan's mom we'll be there in 15 minutes, and we'll see you in a bit, okay? Happy anniversary, honey.
Happy anniversary.
Later, they got divorced because she answered the phone on date night. No, I'm just kidding. Let me ask a question one more time. In light of your past experiences, current circumstances, and future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for you to do in order to avoid regret in this area of life? Maybe ask it this way. In light of what's going on in my life right now, in light of what the health of my marriage or the nature of my current dating relationship, what is a wise thing to do? As I contemplate the future, as I think about the legacy that I want to leave my kids, as I think about the prospect of finishing strong in my marriage, as I think about the story that I want to be able to tell my future spouse, what is the wise thing to do? Listen, the wise thing is not always the easy thing. But in the end, it will always be worth it. Would you bow your heads with me? Let's close our time by praying together. God, these past few weeks have been, well, we've been challenged by this powerful question. This question that I think has the potential to literally save us from all kinds of regret and failure in our lives. I think the question that we can leave with, in addition to the ultimate question, I think that really, really maybe even the more ultimate question is, will we do it? Will we ask it? Will we ask it when it comes to our lives financially, relationally, morally, spiritually? And so, God, I guess the thing that I want to pray today is I want to pray two things. I want to pray that you would give us wisdom. James 1:5, we're told, if you need wisdom, ask our generous God, and he will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking. And so we ask you for wisdom, but I also want to pray and ask you to fill our hearts with courage. Because doing things your way is not always the easy way, and sometimes it requires great faith. It requires great courage. And so I pray for those two things. I pray that you would fill us with courage as we ask that question. What is the wise thing to do? And now would you just take a moment right where you're seated, would you just take a second, and would you ask God to fill you with wisdom? Let's just do that. We've done that every week in the series, and I think what a beautiful way to close this time out, this series out. Would you just take a moment, just in your own way, between you and God, just ask him, God, I need your wisdom. So as I process all of this, as I think about all of this, I reach out and I ask you to fill me with your wisdom. And fill me with courage. And together, as your people, we pray these things. And we ask them together. And everyone said, together, amen.